I voted. I voted, Senator Pogemiller. The chair recognizes Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with. The sergeant at arms be instructed to bring the absent members.
So moved. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion is adopted. Today's chaplain is Pastor Gary Dreyer from Christ Lutheran on Capitol Hill in St. Paul.
Let's pray. And as always, let's begin with a moment of silence where you can lift up to God whatever is on your heart. And now, dear God, as we turn to the affairs of the state, I ask that you bless these people who are here in this room because they love this state. Unite them as they serve the common good. Give them energy for the task. And bless our state. Amen.
Now do we take the roll? The secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Lori, Limmer, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Members, a quorum is present. Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, members, the agenda today is we're going to break for caucus now. Finance Committee is still meeting. Break for caucus. And the idea would be we hope to waive the lieovers on those bills listed on your desk, and we would do them on general orders. All we're trying to do on those bills is get a sense of the Senate because apparently there's all kinds of things in those bills that are in House conference committees, House versions of conference committees. I don't know what's in these bills that's controversial or not, so we'll just hack away at them in general orders and see where we're at. And then the one conference committee I am aware of is the Stoley conference committee that's at the desk. So, Senator Senjum, you're going to, how long do you think? Well, we certainly have to wait until finance committee's done, but.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, room 107, and I'm not sure if we can get these done in a half an hour or not, but we'll try.
Okay. And then either a half hour or whenever the finance committee is done. So, Madam President, I would move to recess to the call of the chair.
Senator Pogemiller moves to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. We're in recess.
Mr. President, I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call.
I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with. Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, are we on motions?
Yes, we are. Well, we're going to start on messages from the House.
Okay.
That's all right. Messages from the House.
First message is on Senate File 245, Senator Berglund. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 245, a bill for an act relating to insurance providing equal access to acupuncture. Senate File 245 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 245 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Berglund, tell the Senate what the bill does and what changes were made since we last saw it. Senator Berglund.
So, members, the changes can be found on House Journal May 4th, page 4,383 through 4,385. The changes were very minor, involving the name of the act, which is in the title, but was not included in the Senate language. And so I would urge you to agree to accept this House language. And the bill itself deals with allowing acupuncture practitioners to bill directly instead of through chiropractors or other physicians.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Senator Berglund renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House of Senate File 245 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion? Secretary, we'll give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 245, a bill for an act relating to insurance providing equal access to acupuncture and a memorial to Edith R. Davis, Minnesota's pioneer acupuncturist.
Secretary, take the roll. All senators, having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 54 ayes, 3 nays, bill is passed, title agreed to. Looks like there will be a couple of more votes here, so keep that in mind.
Next message is on Senate File 412, Senator Moi. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 412, a bill for an act relating to probate, enacting the Uniform Adult Guardianship and Protective Proceedings Jurisdiction Act. Senate File 412 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elvin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House of Senate File 412 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator, briefly about the bill and what changes were made.
This is the uniform guardianship bill that we looked at the other day. There are only three technical word changes to it that doesn't change the substance of the bill at all.
Okay, any discussion, Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Moore, as this bill is now returning, you may recall that there was a discussion between different groups of guardians. Has there been any resolution to their differences regarding this bill? I know that there's still dispute between two professional differences of opinion on this. Has there been any resolve, having a little more unity in the profession regarding this bill?
Mr. President, Senator Limmer, this is not that bill. And when that bill does come up for a vote on the floor, I will tell you that is that bill. This is the uniform one dealing with jurisdictions and with transfer of the seniors.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing Senator Moi renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 412 and that the bill be placed on repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary, give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 412, a bill for an act relating to probate, enacting the Uniform Adult Guardianship and Protective Proceedings Jurisdiction Act.
Secretary will take the roll. Ken? All senators having voted.
I ran up here from conference committee. I don't have my file with me on this. Can I do this later?
Yeah.
It's another message from the House.
That's later. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. Its title agreed to.
The next message is on Senate File 640. Senator Kelash, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 640, a bill for an act relating to waters, providing for temporary drawdown of public waters. Senate File 640 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Kelash.
Mr. Chair, this is a minor change for my temporary drawdown on lakes.
Maybe you can, Senator, make your
your
motion first.
I move that Senate concur with the amendments by the House to Senate File 640 and that the bill be passed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, now, Senator Kelash, give your explanation.
This is the temporary drawdown for invasive species in lakes that the watershed districts wanted. My bill had a majority requirement. The House changed that to 75% of the landowners around the lake approval in order for that to go forward. The DNR watershed districts are okay with that, so I support the bill. The bill is in the House Journal for May 4th, page number 4385 to 4387.
Katie, discussion. Senator Kelash renews his motion that the Senate concur the amendments by the House to Senate File 640 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give Senate File 640 its third reading.
Senate File 640, a bill for an act relating to waters, providing for temporary drawdown of public waters.
Secretary will take the roll. Okay. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There be at 60 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. Its title agreed to.
Next message is on Senate File 708. Senator Phoebe, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which the amendments and concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 708, a bill for an act relating to mortgages, modifying provisions relating to foreclosure consultants. Okay, Senate File 708 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Phoebe.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File Number 708 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
Okay, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Next message is on Senate File 729. Senator Ress, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 729, a bill for an act relating to Hennepin County, modifying personnel rules and procedures. Senate File 729 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Ress.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 729 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended.
Okay, Senator Rest, tell the body what the bill is and what the changes were made.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President and members, the bill dealt with changes in the Hennepin County law with regard to its personnel policies. The House removed one section that was very confusing and was unable to make to
sure
it.
Is that microphone working?
Is it? Can't hear me?
That's it's still not better. It's still not working. All right, you try
Mr.
again.
Mr. President, is this better?
Yeah, that's a lot better. Thank you.
Mr. President, Senate File 729 is a bill dealing with personnel policies in the Hennepin County statute. The House removed one section from the bill because the language was too confusing, and I agree with that and going to be able to find a way of clarifying it. And then they added a small provision to extend the Victor Memorial Drive Task Force for another 2 years. It's a minor provision. They did not add anything different. They just took away that one section, and I think we should concur.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 729, that the bill be placed on repassage as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Secretary will give Senate File 729 its third reading.
Senate File 729, a bill for an act relating to Hennepin County modifying personnel rules and procedures.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Being 60 ayes, one nay, bill is passed, it's title agreed to.
These messages are not on your agenda. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate files, herewith returned. Senate files 247, 1462, and 1486, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2081 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 2081, a bill for an act relating to economic development and housing. Senate File 2081 is herewith returned to the Senate, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Have another one?
These are on your agenda, Mr. President. I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 265 and 1275, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Okay, first reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. They will be referred to the committees as indicated. Without objection, first reading of House bills. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are three printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. We're under motions and resolutions. There's one author's motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's a number of resolutions. Without objection, the resolutions will be sent to the Rules Committee. You want to go to
Mr.
General Orders,
Senator? We have a Conference Committee report, Senate File number 166. Why don't we do that?
Okay. Remaining.
There is a privilege report
under motions.
The desk. The next order of business is the Conference Committee report on Senate File 166.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. President, thank you. I move that the foregoing recommendations and Conference Committee report on Senate File number 166 be now adopted and that the bill be repassed as amended by the Conference Committee.
Okay, before we accept that motion, tell the body what you did in Conference Committee.
Members, this bill is the so-called STOLI bill, which stands for Stranger-Originated Life Insurance. And I have a teachable moment, so I'm going to use it. If you... The person...
Senator Scheid.
For example, I sit at the right side of the pair of desks. My under my desk is just the unofficial engrossments. Under Senator Moy's desk, or the left-hand desk, are the Conference Committee reports. This is new, so I'm just using this opportunity to inform you and tell you that it's available. And there's your copy, Senator Moy. You have to share that copy, the hard copy, but let me tell you what's happened here. We left this body with a very strong anti-STOLI bill. Minnesota has a very weak common law definition of what insurable interest is. And it's one of the reasons that we've become a haven for this kind of transaction. So we strengthen and modernize and codify our insurable interest laws. It's a necessary step, in stopping stolen transactions. As I said, the Senate had a very strong position. The House had a strong position. Thanks to the conference committee, Senator Moore, Rest, Clark, and Gerlach, and myself, we came up with an opportunity here for an even stronger bill before you today. We accepted the House language, which is a regulatory framework, but we also included...
It's really loud. This is a very important bill, and let's listen to the author. And let's try again, Senator Scheid.
And thank you, Mr. President. It's somewhat unique because we accepted the Senate language as well. So we combined the strong House provision with a very strong Senate position. We left here with a five-year prohibition. We did compromise to 4 years, but that should be enough to stop STOLE. And last week, in a hearing before Senator Herb Kohl of Wisconsin's Subcommittee on Aging, a number of experts spoke on this subject in Washington, because obviously we don't have federal law as well. And he said that they should look to Minnesota for an example of what would be good regulation of stranger-originated life insurance. And in fact, he said that our bill is an elegant solution to the STOLE problem. So I'm proud to stand before you, tell you that the conference committee report was signed by all 10 conferees, and hope that you will support it right now.
Further discussion on the conference committee report. Senator Scheid renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of the conference committee report on Senate File 166 be now adopted, and that the bill will be repassed as amended by the conference committee. Secretary will give the bill its third reading. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Third reading.
Senate File 166, a bill for enacting new insurance, regulating life insurance, prohibiting stranger-originated life insurance, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Final passage. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes, 0 nays, bill is passed. Its title agreed.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, members, the intent today is to take up the six bills that are on the list. What I'd like to do is waive the lieovers and then take those six bills up and then pretty much be done for the day on general orders. And apparently the motion has to be made before we go on to general orders. So I move that rule 22.3 be suspended as to the lieover requirement on general orders.
Okay, on the Pogermiller motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move the Senate to now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I would like to designate then number 111, 112, 113, 109, 108, and 106. I would yield to Senator Berglund.
Okay, the first bill under discussion on the agenda is number 111, Senate File 1504, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1504 be recommended to pass.
Okay, discussion on the bill, Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a department bill with small technical language changes. I'll describe in a minute. The major reason for having the bill on the floor today, however, is that this is where the agreement that's been made between the counties, the Department of Human Services, and the mental health advocates about changes to the mental health maintenance of effort lie. They lie in this bill. And because this is being discussed in some conference committees, it's important for us to take this bill up today. The maintenance of effort provision simplifies the administration of maintenance of effort and makes county budgeting more predictable. It also allows an adjustment in the county's mental health maintenance of effort in proportion to reductions in county revenues, such as block grants or state aid to counties, as well as providing a way to count expenditures for alternative mental health services based on certain criteria in the bill. The rest of the bill, Mr. Chairman and members, clarifies staffing qualifications and rate-setting procedures for adult mental health rehab services, expands the options for supervising community health workers by adding mental health professionals that are not already included as allowable community health worker supervisors, and it clarifies the definition of covered services for children's therapeutic services, improves consistency of treatment standards, and brings allowable services in line with federal requirements, and eliminates redundant level of care determinations.
Okay, any further discussion on Senate File 1504? Seeing none, Senator Berglund renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1504 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on the agenda is number 112, Senate File 1867, the Senator Betzel bill. Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee to arise, Senate File 1867 be recommended to pass.
Senator Betzel, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill is an initiative from the administration to create a geospatial information office. Geospatial information is a rather new term. It's something that's coming forward from the folks who work in the GIS, the Geographic Information Systems area. This is the folks who do these worldwide map quests and looking at information when you Google Maps and so forth and are able to hone in on particular areas. This is part of a new system in order to identify information. Currently, we have something in the Department of Administration called the Land Management Information Center. That office is going to be phased out, and a lot of the functions, including others, are going to be moved into this new office. Basically, we've gone beyond just identifying where land is and people can just look things on up on the Internet, to actually using the information for purposes such as when the 35W bridge collapsed, there was a need for immediate information and knowing, you know, what areas were available around the site of the tragedy, what could be used, what services could get in and get out. And so this is actually going far beyond just knowing what the land is. And as I say, what we're basically doing is creating a new office but phasing out all other offices and transferring some of the both technology and the data information into this new office. As you can see from the bill, there's going to be an advisory commission, and also they're going to set some fees for the costs as clients are going to use some of this data from the government, and that's actually typically what is already being done under the Land Management Information Center. It's a pretty straightforward bill, Mr. Chairman, and I stand for any questions.
Any further discussion on Senate File 1867? Seeing none, Senator Betzel renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1867 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on today's agenda Be Senate File 1889, Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File number 1889 be recommended to pass.
Senator Gerlach, discussion on the bill.
Thank you. Members, this is, I'll explain it quite simply here. Under current law, when the Office of the Attorney General reaches a settlement in a case that they had been pursuing, the proceeds from that, if they are in the amount of greater than $750,000, are deposited into the general fund, in which case we as legislators then, of course, would appropriate in our normal deliberations. Under current law, if that settlement is less than $750,000, then that money is distributed by the Attorney General. And you may know that within the last couple of years, there have been some press coverage about settlements being $1 less than that threshold to trigger it. And the Office of the Legislative Auditor, although put some spotlight on it, did determine that that there was nothing wrong in that, in accordance of law, that the letter of the law was followed. However, I think that the spirit of the law created some controversy. This bill simply removes that threshold and says that any dollar, the first dollar, is taxpayer dollars, or it's brought into the state, and that it is us as legislators through the legislative process that should decide how that those dollars are distributed or appropriated. This bill went through the State Government Budget Division and the full Finance Committee. The Attorney General's office does not oppose this bill, and I think it's just good transparency, good public policy, and I'd appreciate your vote. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on Senate File 1889? Seeing none, Senator Gerlach renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1889 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, the next bill on the agenda this afternoon will be Senate File 1459. Senator Bonneff, do you have a motion to read? Senator Bonneff.
Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, that we pass.
Senate File 1459 be recommended to pass.
Senate File number 1459 be recommended to pass.
Okay, tell the discussion on your bill, Senator Bonneff.
Thank you. Mr. President, Senate File 1459 is a cooperative purchasing bill. This is actually a bill that the Department of Administration brought forward. This bill states that for fiscal years 2010, 2011, and 2012, whenever it is practicable and cost-effective, that our municipalities must contract for the purchase of supplies, materials, or equipment by utilizing contracts that are available through the state's cooperative purchasing venture. Mr. President, there's an amendment at the desk.
Secretary, pardon? I guess it's being copied right now. Do you have any further remarks about your bill? Can you stall for 2.5 minutes?
The amendment that you will receive switches the words cities, counties, and townships to municipalities to make sure that we're covering all aspects of local government. And again, this is similar to the bill that I have previously discussed on the Senate floor with regard to shared services, and that it is so important at this time when we are looking to balance our state's budget with a significant deficit. It is our responsibility as a legislature to do all that we can to make certain we are delivering the services we provide at the best possible price and the highest quality. So this legislation is in support of that. It's saying that it isn't just about cutting. It's not just about raising revenue. This is about real significant reform. This is about making sure that what we do the very best and most efficient way possible.
Secretary will report the A2 amendment.
Senator Bonhoff moves to amend Senate File 1459 as follows, page 1, line 8. This is Amendment A-2.
Okay, we're on the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now we're on the bill as amended. Senator, discussion, Senator Olson, Jen Olson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Bonhoff, the amendment went on rather fast. You said you were changing the definition, the statement of the local units of government and putting in the term municipality. Some of the discussion we've been having in the Education Conference Committee relative to OPEB, the other post-employment benefits, was regarding a section of law where the definition of municipality included school districts. That is not typical. Is there another definition, or are you in this amendment, which I have not been able to pull up yet, did you reference a particular definition of municipality in some other portion of statute, or have you defined it there?
Senator Bonham.
Mr. President, Senator Olson, it is the intention with this amendment to include school districts. The bill that we passed off the Senate floor was the shared purchasing for school districts. So this, in fact, reaffirms that commitment with this legislation, and that is the language that the House adopted on the Senate floor. And so this reflects, in the shared services bill that was passed, we dealt with both cooperative purchasing as well as working with the consultant on a shared services arrangement. This bill only addresses the purchasing side of things, and so it's a way of having that intention in a couple different places. They will be conferencing that bill, and so I wanted to make sure we had a Senate position that reflected our intention to include school districts.
Yep. Well, further discussion, Senator Jen Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, I don't think the term municipality always means school districts. And I think that was one of the things that was a little bit confusing about the way in which our law was changed as it affected the OPEB in terms of bonding. Maybe I'm wrong, but if municipality, if that is the known definition of it, or if there's more than one in statutes, I think you should reference the one you mean.
Senator Bonham.
Mr. President, municipality, I've been advised by counsel, in the section as cross-reference, does include school districts.
Okay. Any further discussion on Senate File 1459 as amended? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, now that the A2 amendment is involved in this bill, been included, with the inclusion of school districts, do you know if the school districts that were writing us in opposition to your original school district bill, have they changed their position, do you know? Or would they still be opposed to this bill now that the school districts are referenced?
Mr. President.
Senator Bonham.
Senator Limmer, I have not heard. I've had this bill in this form. I have not heard from the school districts with regard to this bill, and I know this was amended and passed off the House floor, and I have not heard or seen any comments on that, so I don't have an answer for you.
Senator Sedgham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Bonhoff yield?
She will yield, Senator Bonhoff.
Senator Bonhoff, on line 1-8, it talks about whenever determined to be practical or cost-effective. Can you at least describe for the floor what that would mean to you, and more importantly, who would be the judge of that? Who would be the judge of what is practicable and cost effective? Is that the school district, the municipality? Is that the state auditor, or who might that be?
Senator Bonham.
Mr. President, Senator Sedgham, I have been assured by the Department of Administration, both the current commissioner as well as her staff, that this is not going to be an attempt to police our local units of government, including school districts. That the language is included whenever cost practicable or cost effective to allow them to make that decision locally, and that in accordance with the provisions we already have in statute, which allows them to do the competitive bidding process in a particular way, that this will be in keeping with that process. And so this is not going to be an additional layer of bureaucracy. It's rather going to be a nudge to say, make sure you are looking under every rock. Make sure you are making the best possible choice before you make this purchase. And most importantly, for the Department of Administration, they feel as though it's opening the door for them to market the tremendous price and competitive options that they have available. That, you know, once this goes into effect, that then there might be a more open and willing reception towards the contracts they have negotiated. And so we look at this as a beginning of a cultural shift and a welcoming of a partnership between local units of government and the state of Minnesota. In addition, I want to point to the language that says that you do not need to buy from the state contract if you are already involved in a different kind of joint purchasing agreement. And that would be, for example, the way the MNSCU is structured, or we have different arrangements between states that are joint powers that are outside of this provision.
Further discussion on Senate File 1459. As amended. Seeing none, Senator Bonnef renews her motion that when this committee do rise, Senate File 1459 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator, next bill on the agenda, Senate File 1125, Senator Pappas.
I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 1125 be recommended to pass.
Senator Pappas, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that was brought to me by the Association of Minnesota Counties, and it allows county boards to make the offices of auditor, treasurer, and recorder appointed rather than elected positions. Over many years, the legislature has passed special legislation on a case-by-case basis. And for those who have been on state or local government over the years, you know that they come in one at a time, these counties. And they ask us to give them the authority to make the change subject to a reverse referendum. So what the bill before you today will do is it'll create uniform authority for all county boards to decide locally through an open and transparent public process whether to appoint or elect the offices of auditor, treasurer, and recorder. It does require 80% of the board to vote in support of making these offices appointed. It requires two public notices in addition to a public hearing, and there is a provision for a public petition to require a county-wide referendum. And in a number of cases, a couple cases where the legislature has granted this authority, there has been a reverse referendum. So we know that that process does work. The public policy behind this provision is that policymakers should be elected, and positions that are strictly technical, like the auditor or the treasurer or the recorder or the coroner, should be appointed because they need to be professionals who are specifically trained to carry out the duties of their office. The jobs have often grown in complexity and require greater skills, and so many more counties have been pursuing this option. And it really is streamlining government so that we don't make them come to the legislature to get permission, but they are elected officials. They have to have an 80% of their board members, 4 out of 5, have to agree to do this. And the public is safeguarded by the petition and reverse referendum option. So I would appreciate everyone's support.
Discussion. Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Pappas, you're streamlining government, but you're streamlining the voter out of government and their input. And so I would oppose this statewide move towards less accountability and less involvement by the people in their government. We should vote no on this. I'd request a roll call.
Your roll call, Senator. Three hands. Well, raise your hand, Ray. Seeing three hands, there will be a roll call. Barely made it. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would the author yield for a question?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Senator. A lot of times we legislate pass legislation, because things need fixing and things are broken. Where I'm going with this question is I'm wondering, has any counties from the Association of Minnesota Counties come to you with any particular a situation where the elected process has not worked for the offices you've talked about?
Senator Pappas, did you hear the question?
Senator, your question is, did any counties
come to you? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
What, not want to come to the legislature and ask us to give them permission to make their some of their elected office appointed? I don't know that we have turned anyone down. In the years I've been on state government or local government or metro government, whatever it was called, the legislature has never turned anyone down. We usually did require a letter from the county board, so we had an indication or a vote by the county board, a resolution from the county board, and we had a public hearing. And we would grant it, and there were in two cases that they told me about in two counties where the voters did do the reverse referendum. One was the citizens in Big Stone, Kuchiching, and Pipestone used the petition and reverse referendum mechanism to block efforts. So, you know, the public was aware of the situation, and in cases where they wanted to not do it, they were able to use that option. However, the reality is that right now, 26 counties have been granted authority. Manhattan County started in 1967, and I think we have maybe 3.7 million people, roughly 70% of Minnesota citizens, have combined these positions.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, in the past, I've gotten up and talked about the very bills that Senator Pappas is talking about with regards to the taking away the right to vote. And frankly, that's exactly what we're going to be doing if you vote for this today. You are going to be telling those voters out there that actually voted those county commissioners in and actually voted for you and I to be here, that they're not qualified enough to vote for their elected officials. And for some reason or other, the auditor and treasurer's positions now become more technical in nature. I'm not understanding that, not buying that. Frankly, if you're gonna run for one of those offices, it would seem to me that you'd have a better chance of winning if you could prove that you had some kind of a business degree and you were a good bean counter, quite frankly. But what's going to happen here today if you vote for this? You're going to take away obviously the right for folks to vote for these positions, but you're also going to take away the accountability that goes with the statutory responsibilities of the auditor, treasurer, and also the recorder. In other words, the county board that oversees all the county budgets will basically have carte blanche when it comes to doing whatever they like, because they have an auditor now, or a treasurer, specifically an auditor, I guess I'm talking about here, that has an opportunity to audit and does audit every county budget in the county system, is now going to have to audit the county board, and if they come up with some problems, that person's going to have to say, well, listen now, am I going to be able to bring this up and make an issue out of this expenditure that might be questionable here? And if I do, if I make three of those members unhappy, maybe I'm going to be going down the road. Folks, right now, the way it sits, everybody in the county is represented by that auditor. That auditor has the opportunity to point those things out without having to worry about such a thing. So let's not insult the voters. Let's let them continue to do what they've been doing that apparently has not been broken. County boards have been thrashing with this for years. They've actually now hired county administrators, and in some counties, county coordinators to help them with the process. The secretary of the board process that the auditors for so many years had the responsibility of doing. Let's leave that check and balance there the way it is. Leave the statute the way it is, and the very same people that voted you and I into office, leave them with the same responsibility and the same right to vote through their county officials. So vote against this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, I rise in opposition to this bill, and it's not something new for me. This is my 23rd year in the legislature, and I've opposed all these bills that have come up to decrease the number of elected officials that we have consistently throughout that time. Before I got here, I was a county commissioner. Now, there's three organizations that oppose this legislation. I got a letter this morning, an email from Lynette Trupp, who is the Minnesota County Recorders Association legislative co-chair and also the McLeod County Recorder. There are three organizations opposing this legislation. It's the Minnesota County Recorders Association, the Minnesota Association of County Auditors, Treasurers, and Financial Officers, and the Minnesota Association of County Officers. Now, Lynette Shrupp goes on to say, she says, I ask that you oppose this bill, which takes voting rights away from the people. It gives commissioners the right to make decisions for the whole county. If this goes through, your job will be next. Will the governor appoint senators and representatives? Our servicemen and women are fighting in other countries to give them voting rights, and here in America we are taking away voting rights. Now, in another document I've got here, another item that is mentioned is that this bill reduces citizens' voting rights and eliminates a critical part of the county checks and balances. Since most of these positions are currently elected, they can monitor the activities of the county commissioners and point out problems with their policies without the threat of retribution. So for the reasons I've just identified, plus the three organizations here that are opposing this legislation, I would urge you to vote no on this legislation. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. 70% of the state seems to manage without an elected county auditor or treasurer. Frankly, if the auditors and treasurers are such excellent candidates, they can apply for the job, number one. But number two, the reality is that county boards are sensitive to this issue, and they typically make this move when there is a retirement or a vacancy in the office of some kind. Then they decide, now it's time for us to kind of join the rest of civilization and decide that, yes, elected officials need to be policymakers, and county auditors and treasurers are really, you know, number counters, and they need to be good number counters, but they don't determine policy for the county. They just need to be really, you know, CPAs are really good with numbers and do their job well, and but they don't need to have to run for election. So, you know, we have never turned down a county when they've come to our committee to request this. And the Association of Minnesota Counties, they had a big package of reform proposals. And one after one, the legislature has said, you know, that reform, but not this reform. And at some point, we just have to go with the reform. This is a big reform effort for them to help them be more efficient in how they manage government in their county and let them decide in their county with voter oversight. That's very important, I agree. But we don't have to have, you know, automatic elections for dog catcher, frankly. We need to have important elections for meaningful positions for people who are going to really make policy.
Okay, Senator Vandiver.
So county auditors are dog catchers? Is that what we're comparing them to? Let's keep them elected.
Senator Olson and Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is a pretty clear-cut decision to make.
Looking at the sections of law that is being amended relative to officers elected, it appears that that section was put in place in 1918 and said that a county auditor, a county treasurer, sheriff, county recorder, county attorney, and coroner shall be elected at the general election. How many of our 87 counties still have an elected coroner? Does anybody know?
Probably not. Senator Ingebrigtsen? We'll check
Mr. Chair,
that out. Somebody else.
I think the point is our times do change, and sometimes having that option available is not necessarily taking away the rights of the people. It's just responding to the way governance operates. I don't think we should ever eliminate all elections, but there may be some common sense that can apply in a few of these cases.
Okay. We don't want to call on the county coroner, do we? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure of that answer. That answer myself, I think in absence of a county coroner, there might be one of the other elected officials probably has the authority. I'm not sure exactly, but to Senator Pappas's point with regards to 70%, I don't understand whether she's coming up with that figure. Actually, 70% of the state of Minnesota still elects their auditor treasurers. There's only 27 counties total that have done this, so I think the percentage is reversed, actually. And folks, you're talking about a financial person, the financial oversight that can actually point out wrongdoing in all budgets in the county. And to minimize that responsibility, I think is short-sighted when we have, in this day and age of transparency, I think that was even mentioned here, when it comes to transparency, what could possibly be more transparent than somebody who can actually point the finger at somebody without having to worry about any recourse? And by doing the appointed process, folks, you are throwing politics into this office that is absolutely not needed, and I think the public wants us to leave them alone, let them vote for their public officials, and please vote against this bill.
Senator,
just one final Pappas. Comment, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman. That no one is forcing the counties to do this. It would be totally up to them. And, you know, democracy is often a little romanticized because 46 counties had no challengers running against these row officers. So there isn't a robust challenge when the office is considered just, you know, just technical. It's not really important to the policymaking of the county. What is important is that they have good, bright people who do provide some kind of fiscal oversight, and I think that's part of their fiduciary duties to provide that, whether they are appointed or elected.
Senator Pappas renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1125 be recommended to pass. The Secretary will take the roll on that motion.
is a good order. Check my emails.
All senators having voted. Desire to vote.
Hey, come on. Jim, you got to help Sandy Pappas now.
Secretary. We'll close the roll. There'll be 26 ayes and 29 nays. The motion does not prevail. The next bill, the last bill on the calendar or on the agenda this afternoon, is Senate File Number 2, Senator Cohn.
Mr. Chairman, I move that this committee to arise that Senate File Number 2 be recommended to pass.
Senator Cohn, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is a budget reform bill, although it contains several other provisions now that I've worked on for a couple of years. And basically what it comes from is my feeling, and this is not it has not been characterized as such. This is not my argument with the present administration. This is my argument with any administration in terms of the kind of information that's provided to us in the budget documents, which I think is insufficient. So that's where the that's where this legislation.
Let's quiet it down a little bit. Senator Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for making it harder on me. So what this bill does is it has several provisions relative to the budget process. And if you look at Article 1 of the bill, which is the principal section, it has a fiscal note procedure to set up a uniform fiscal note process. Members have heard a lot of discussion this year, particularly from Senator Berglund, relative to problems she's had with the fiscal note process. That's been an ongoing problem with the agencies over the years. So it sets up a process for that. Another issue that we've talked about is setting up a local impact note. We have a lot of bills that deal with local issues, and we get into this discussion, which has not been well-based on either side as to what the impact is or is not. Senator Clark, in Section 4, I don't think she's on the floor, has set up the Office of Strategic and Long-Range Planning with the Commissioner of Administration. I should also mention something that dovetails with another piece of legislation I have, the State Demographer, and Section 5 requests that the demographer issue a demographic forecast for the state. The other piece of legislation I make a reference to that members have heard, some members have heard, is the legislation that implements the recommendations from the Budget Trends Commission, which establishes in addition to the budget forecast, establishes a demographic forecast. I think members are aware of the work that Mr. Gillespie, the state demographer, has done, which is first rate. This legislation, coupled with the other legislation, utilizes him in a very appropriate way. Senator Clark has also worked very hard on the milestones report. That's contained within this bill. There are several provisions, and I'm looking for Senator Rest. She's here. There are several provisions that Senator Rest has worked on in terms of the website database relative to being able to research more easily expenditure items within the budget, other data relative to the state budget. That has not been done well. Section 9 is something that I feel very important, and that's to have within the governor's budget information on the three most recent fiscal years. If you look at the budget books, if I go back to when I was first a budget chairman in this body in 1993, the budget books had much more information relative to the promulgation by the governor in terms of looking at having a look backwards in time in terms of what we've done in past years. Section 10 also requests the same kind of information. There's another section that deals with the cash flow forecast. Section 12 provides a budget estimates to include the agency request. That also was previously included in budget books that we had. I'm not sure when that was dropped from budget books. I think somewhere around 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. But we were able to look at an agency request and try to determine what the agency might do in an optimal situation and what the governor thinks appropriate. That kind of complete budget information was utilized, I think, quite effectively by members of the legislature throughout the budget process. Other sections of this bill are provisions from other authors. Senator Moi has provided money for a map of children, so we have a better sense of what's going on with children in Minnesota. Senator Roebling had the legislation relative to the employee suggestion system to solicit suggestions from the state employees. There's a section 16, that deals with the rights of classified employees. I don't think we should in any way politicize our classified workforce, but I want to make sure that that workforce is available to the legislature as well as to the administration to work with us on the promulgation of legislation. Section 17 is a combination of legislation of mine and Senator Olson that deals with whistleblowers. And Section 18 is something that requested, I won't say requested by fiscal staff, but something that we would hope the fiscal staff would utilize to work with the Commissioner of Finance to put together a legislative working group. And this is not meant to have legislators on the group, but to work on looking at the state budget documents and the state budget information, how they integrate with our budget. Section 19, the License Reinstatement Diversion Program, is legislation of Senator Pretner Solens, who's also not on the floor. I was going to ask her to talk about that. And then we have Article 2, which is kind of an old standby, kind of an oldie but a favorite, where we abolish some of the assistant commissioners, try to impose some discipline on the executive branch of government when we're looking at these significant budget cuts, to look at what's a more realistic unclassified number of commissioners, not commissioners, but assistant commissioners and deputy commissioners. We've had this legislation over the last several years, and that's why I suggest I think people are quite familiar with it. So, members, that's kind of a quick review of what's become a combination of reform efforts, and would certainly ask for your support.
Further discussion on Senate File Number 2. Further discussion, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Cohen, you talk about budget reform, so I want to help you out this afternoon. And I'd like to offer the A-17, Mr. Chair, the A-17.
Secretary will report Michelle A-17 amendment.
You take it off.
Senator Michelle moves to amend Senate File 2 as follows. Page 1 after line 26, insert. This is Amendment A-17.
Senator Michelle, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The intent of this language is pretty simple, and it's actually quite relevant to where we are here at the beginning of May. But the intent of this language is to require the legislature to pass a tax bill first to figure out how much revenue we have before we start passing spending bills. So to figure out what's in the bank before we start writing checks. Mr. Chair, families and businesses do it this way. State government should do it this way. I think this year, this budget session illustrates it better than most. It's a little awkward. Even last night, we started to pass spending bills without knowing if we even have a tax bill this year. So spending first, Mr. Chair, spending first is what Washington, D.C. does, but state government should not work that way. Let's figure out what the dollars are first, then go through the committee process, make choices, figure out what our priorities are, and then do the budget bills.
Further discussion on Senate File Number 2. Seeing none, Senator Cohen renews his motion that when Senator Hand...
Mr. Chairman, were you calling for the final vote on the bill, or were we talking about a particular amendment?
That's right. I was. We're on the amendment.
On the amendment, is that correct? Was this amendment roll called? I'd like to request.
Would you like a roll call? Three hands.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Excuse me. Yes, we are on the A-17 amendment. That was my fault, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle is, of course, one of my favorites, and this is an example of that. I'm not quite sure how this would work. It sounds great in theory, but highly impractical in practice. And Senator Michelle has now been here for 10 years or so. 7 years. 7 years. It only seems like 10. And so Senator Michelle has been around the fiscal process. He's been around the tax process. And I think all of us recognize that when you have the complexity of a tax bill, which is always the largest bill of the session, that there's not the ability on the part of tax staff, tax committee members, to put a hold on every single appropriation bill, finance bill, until we pass a tax bill. What that would lead to, and there's no question, maybe Senator Bach would like to comment on it as well, but there's no question that what that would lead to is absolute chaos, because the reality is if we delayed everything until we passed the tax bill, then we would do exactly what the public hates, and that is we do everything in 5 days, 10 days, and it would just be a complete mess, understandable to nobody on the floor of the Senate, much less anybody outside the chamber. So I would certainly ask, Senator Hand has asked for a roll call vote, and I would certainly hope members would vote no on the amendment and vote on the side of practicality within the legislative process.
We're on the A-17 amendment, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Senator Cohen's discussion, but chaos. What do we have now? Let's look around here about May 16th, May 17th. I mean, to suggest that we can't change how we do this, to suggest that we can't change the order in a way that would make sense because we want to hold on to the good way that we do it now. Boy, I would hope we'd be open to a little more suggestions in that, Mr. Chair. And absolutely, you would have to start putting together your budget bills. You've got budget divisions all working. Again, the point of this amendment is just pass the tax bill first. It's the most important thing we do, and you just suggested that. It's very complex. Senator Bach is doing a lot of work right now. But let's have that bill done first. That helps define everything else that we do.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Michelle, I'm so grateful that you brought this amendment because this is the discussion that we should be having. We should set our tax policy first and then decide how much we can spend. That's how every family budget works. That's how every business budget works. Why can't government work under those principles? We certainly should. It seems to me that if we're going to raise $1.4 billion on the backs of hardworking Minnesotans in the lower two tax brackets, we should look at that and decide, instead of how much do we need to take out of their pockets, we should ask how much can they afford to support government? How much government can Minnesotans afford? I would say, and most constituents would say, they have way more government right now than they can afford. Senator Michelle's amendment puts this budget discussion back in order. I hope members will vote for the amendment.
Further discussion on the A-17 amendment, Senator Sangham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You go back home and you get a lot of common sense, and thank goodness we go back home once in a while. But the whole issue, do taxes follow spending, or does spending follow taxes? And you go back home and you ask, clearly they'd suggest that
you decide what you're going to raise first, and then you, in fact, spend accordingly. And that's what they do back home. That's what they do around the kitchen table. That's what we ought to do in the Minnesota Senate. So please vote yes for Senator Michelle's amendment.
Secretary will take the roll on the Michelle amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to offer the A-16 amendment.
Secretary will report the Ortman A-16 amendment.
Senator Ortman moves to amend Senate File 2 as follows. Page 1 after line 26, insert. This is amendment A-16.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our very capable pages are passing out a chart that I just drew up while we were sitting here in session. It shows the Minnesota State Legislative Days. The source is from the Minnesota Legislative Reference Library. And they track how many days we meet each session. And they gave us information from 1879. I tracked 1879 through 2008. There was actually more information going back to the territorial days. But since we adopted our Constitution and put in place biennial sessions, I thought we should start tracking since then. And we were authorized in the 1890s to meet 120 days. That is what our Constitution says. Constitution of the State of Minnesota, Article 4, Section 12, members, says that the legislature shall meet at the seat of government, that's St. Paul, in regular session in each biennium at the times prescribed by law, not exceeding a total of 120 legislative days. Look at our chart. We're doing pretty good. Doesn't it look like we're doing pretty good? We're under 120 days. But let's talk about that. We're actually not doing very well at all if you understand the history. The notes will tell you that in 1879, we began our biennial sessions. The legislature met every other year in 1879. We did pretty good underneath that 120-day bar. But when we got to being very prolific, we got to be a really good legislature. We started meeting a lot in the 1960s and 70s. Do you know what we did? We changed the definition of a day. A day is not a day in St. Paul. A day in Minnetonka, Chanhassen, and Wilmer is normally a 24-hour day. It looks like it on a calendar. We have something special in St. Paul. We have a legislative day. And a legislative day is the day that we get called to order. So if we actually don't get called to order, it doesn't count as a legislative day. So if we meet on Mondays and Thursdays, that's 2 days. Most Minnesotans would say Monday through Thursday. That's Monday, Tuesday, 4 days. But not if you're in Minnesota, St. Paul, State Senate. We can redefine a day in Minnesota State Senate. So we redefined it in 1972. Isn't that interesting? So that we would get in under the constitutional requirement of meeting in 120 days. But guess what we did just a couple weeks ago? Do you see we're getting up there again? We're getting up there again, ladies and gentlemen, 2007, 2008. We're close to the 120-day deadline again. So what did we do just a couple weeks ago? We redefined a legislative day all over again. Now, a legislative day is only those days when we vote. If we don't vote, well, it doesn't count. Except guess what? To Minnesotans, it counts. To Minnesota businesses, it counts. And every day we are here, we are passing laws, we are working to change Minnesota, and not necessarily for the better. And each time we stretch this out, it gives us more and more time to grandstand about our budget against the governor, against the taxpayers. We're just going to grandstand more and more. We won't even call it a day anymore. Mr. President, I would like to know if the author of this bill will yield for a question.
The author will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Cohen, does this bill have a title? I understand it has a title. What's the title of this bill, Senator Cohen?
Senator Cohen.
I personally call it a really good bill.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think it's kind of interesting because it's called the Government Accountability and Finance Reform Bill. Mr. President, I think we have a chance to actually do some accountability here, to prescribe accountability. We can take back what we did in Senate File 1117, Senator Pogemiller's bill, to redefine a day. So the A16 amendment, Mr. President, will redefine us and put us back on the track with Minnesotans so we speak the same language, we read the same calendar. A day should be a calendar day, and we should meet, and they should all count except Sundays. Even God took a rest on Sundays. We can do the same thing. God's calendar should be good enough for the Minnesota State Legislature. Let's meet for up to 6 days a week. Take a break on Sunday. We won't count it, and then we'll go home. Do our business. Go home. I hope members will vote for this. Vote for an amendment to the Government Accountability and Finance Reform Bill. Then it'll be a good bill.
We're on the amendment. Senator Van Dier.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Ortman yield?
She will yield, Senator Vandiver.
Senator Ortman, thank you for that history on legislative days. Maybe you could tell us, in the newly defined day that is not a legislative day where we don't vote, so we're not here, but we are here, do we get per diem on those days?
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President and Senator Vandiver, we do indeed.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the Ortman motion? Three hands. There'll be a roll call. We're voting on the Senator Pappas discussion on this.
Mr. Chairman, I actually think a legislative day should be from sundown to sundown for us Jews. And I think we should not meet from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown out of respect for the Shabbat.
Okay, Senator Ortman, then we're going to vote.
Mr. President, if Senator Pappas would like to offer an oral amendment, I would be completely open to that. Hopefully then she'll support the amendment for the same reason I do, that would be a good reform.
Okay, the Secretary will take the roll on the Ortman amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Read 15 ayes, 37 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A15 amendment.
Secretary will report the Koch A-15 amendment.
Senator Koch moves to amend Senate File 2 as follows. Page 1 after line 26, insert. This is amendment A-15.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Senate Republican Caucus really did get pretty excited when we saw the title of the bill, Government Accountability and Economic Reform, and the ideas were flying fast and furiously. This amendment is quite simple, members. It reduces the size of the Minnesota Senate from 67 members to 45 members. Members, we are currently the largest Senate in the country. Minnesota Senate, the largest Senate in the country. State of Minnesota ranks currently 21st in population, and we have the largest Senate with 67 members. What this amendment would do would take the Senate down to 45. It would actually leave the House. You would notice that we're adding one member to the House. The apportionment there would be one senator to three House members. Obviously, members, we're going to be saving money here. I'm sure that some folks are going to talk about, well, you're reducing the contact that perhaps some that I can have with my constituents. But here's my argument to that. One, I mitigate that by doing the 3-to-1 apportionment. So there still are the same, actually a little more representation in the House. Second of all, members, and I know we're not supposed to use visual aids, but I just would like to show, we've got PDAs, cell phones, computers. Technology has made it so much easier for us to have contact with our constituents. Technology has increased efficiency in so many areas and so many parts of our lives. It should increase our efficiency in government, and it should increase our efficiency as senators. And so I think that the 67 apportionment was done at a time when we were still using stamps. I think this would be a really good a good way. The other thing I would point out is we're 21st in population, we're 17th ranking in legislative pay, but we are currently 32 when you rank us in constituents represented. And so by doing this, you'd add our member. We currently represent about 73,000. We'd go to about 120,000. That would put us 24th in constituents represented, which would really be more in line with the population that we have and our legislative pay. So, members, I'd ask you to support the amendment.
Okay, we're on the A-15 Koch amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying three hands. Be a roll call. Secretary will take the roll on the Koch amendment.
Do
you
increase the size?
On the vote. Okay, we do have a. Okay, I think we're going to... Were they notified? Got a couple of conference committees going, but they have been told, so I think if they... A couple of conference committees are meeting. We instructed them that we're voting, and if they chose not to show up, we're going to, which they did, secretary will close the roll. If we had 24 ayes, 27 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Sanjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have the A13 amendment.
Secretary will report the Sanjum A13 amendment.
Senator Sanjum moved to amend Senate File 2 as follows. Page 1, delete Section 1. This is Amendment A13.
Senator Sanjum, on your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm reminded that one should never get the A13 amendment because... we don't like that number, but Mr. Chair, it's a good amendment. Frankly, what it is all about is getting rid of, terminating, repealing, abolishing something called the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy. And Mr. Chair, I and a number of other members have sat on this commission now for the last many months, hour after hour after hour. I can only politely define it as, frankly, worthless, ineffective, duplicative, non-productive, ineffective, inefficient. The words go on and on. Only to be, if you will, manifested once again last evening as several of us sat there over an hour waiting for the commission to start. This is nothing but a political stage, members, and... let's get rid of it. We've got great finance committees. We've got great tax committee. We've got intelligent people that can sit around the table in those committees and do the work. As I read through the duties of this commission, insofar as I'm aware, if they've done any, it's probably at a D-minus level, any of these duties. So, Mr. President, or pardon me, Mr. Chair and members, I think it's a commission that's over and above what we need in the Minnesota Senate. It is comprised of a group of people that I don't think that necessarily stature or position within the Senate ought to put you in a pedestal that says, I know more than anybody else. Let's let our members, let's let those on the finance committees, let's let those on the tax committee make these decisions. We don't need to go to a commission for all of this. Let's abolish this thing and move on. In a way that everybody participates and I think is much more effective for this body. And Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call.
Hey, three hands for a roll call. There'll be a roll call. Senator Vandeveer on the amendment.
Yes, Mr. President.
Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Sanjum, you described an organization that was worthless, ineffective, meaningless, irrelevant, duplicative. Isn't that something we should be promoting into a cabinet level position?
Okay, Secretary will take the roll on the Sanjum amendment. All senators having voted, Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 16 ayes, 34 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A14 amendment.
Secretary will report the Hand A14 amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate File 2 as follows, page 12, line 8. This is amendment A14.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, this is just a real brief language amendment to page 12, the section 16 pertaining to the duties and rights of classified employees. And my amendment simply inserts the phrase, including employees of the Attorney General in the classified service, as a part of the employees included in the scope of this bill. I think if we're going to be making some statements about how people ought to be working and cooperating and serving in a nonpartisan manner, I think that is good language for the Attorney General's office as well. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like a roll call vote.
Three hands. There'll be a roll call. Secretary Senator Cohn.
Mr. Chairman, I would accept the amendment.
Okay. Would I withdraw your roll call?
Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw the roll call.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Any further discussion on Senate File Number 2, Senator Hand?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we had such good result with the last amendment, I'd like to offer the A18 amendment.
Boy. Secretary will report the Hand A18 amendment.
Senator Hand moves to amend Senate File 2 as follows. Page 17 after line 8, insert. This is amendment A18.
Senator Hand, on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. In this section of Senator Cohen's bill, they're talking about limiting the number of appointments into the various departments in the governor's office and the commissioner's offices. And this amendment that I have simply would make a very similar kind of request, or I guess not a request, it would become a law as far as the Attorney General's office. Right now, the Attorney General's office can appoint 6 deputy attorneys and 35 assistant attorney generals. All of these are partisan appointments, far more than any other branch of the executive has for any other office. And all my amendment would do is say that the Attorney General could appoint 1 deputy attorney general and 4 assistant attorneys general, and furthermore that these would be classified positions rather than partisan appointments. And so, members, I think consistent with the direction of Senator Cohen's bill, with trying to bring about good government to the executive branch and recognizing the Attorney General's office as a part of the executive branch, I'd urge your support of this very good amendment, and I'd like a roll call vote.
Three hands. Your roll call, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want Senator Hand to get too anxious given his success in the last amendment. This amendment would make a significant difference in the Attorney General's office, irrespective of whom is the Attorney General. It would absolutely prevent work from being carried forward by the Attorney General, not simply on a partisan basis, but in terms of the work that's necessary by that office. I would hope members would oppose this ill-thought-out amendment.
Senator Hand.
Mr. President and Senator Cohen, I guess I'm not sure why your objection to that. I think that we limit the other executive branches with a limited number of political appointments. Doesn't say that there has to be a limited number of staff. If there's a need for people to be on staff, they can be put there in other ways other than the political appointment process. And so all this is trying to do is recognize the principle that you're getting at in your bill, which is that you don't want to have a lot of political appointments in the executive branch, at least in the governor's office or in the commissioner's and the governor's purvey. And so this would simply apply that same rationale to the Attorney General's office. It says nothing about what the total size of the Attorney General staff ought to be. And so, members, I urge your support.
Secretary will take the roll on the Hann Amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 18 ayes and 32 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed to. Excuse me. The amendment fails. We're trying to move a little faster here, Limmer. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would Senator... Cohen yield for your question.
You're slipping too. Senator Cohen will yield.
Senator Cohen, I had a question regarding your bill. In a bill that's entitled Government Accountability and Reform, I was wondering why Section 19, starting on page 13, would be in your bill. That's the diversion programs, pilot programs, for license reinstatement for DWI offenders. And I was wondering why it's in this bill. It was in an earlier bill that has already passed the Senate, and I was wondering if you could explain to me why it's in this bill.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I was offered as an amendment and it passed. Wasn't in the bill originally.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Cohen, we do occasionally bring up the one subject rule, which you're familiar with. It's a constitutional requirement that bills should be of one general subject. And this bill provision that you have in Section 19 doesn't have any relationship to the one subject rule, I don't believe. And I'm just wondering why it was in here. Well, we've already voted for it. I know that the bill that it was a part of was a rather controversial bill. It may even be vetoed by the governor. Maybe that's why it's in this bill. Maybe someone has already kind of thought that maybe that one doesn't have a ghost of a chance to pass, so we're going to at least try and slip it in this bill. We know that occasionally is done, but the question I have is that if these programs go in, it would allow an individual convicted of something as serious as a DWI to continue driving before completing the terms of their conviction or paying any fines. Why would you, Senator Cohen, want a person who is convicted of a DWI to be on our streets driving under these diversion programs?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, you're about the third person, I think, to cite the title of the bill, which is a lengthy title. I'll be honest, as I mentioned, there were a number of people who had provisions in the bill, and I cited those members as I went through the bill originally. This was language of Senator Pretner Solon. She's not here, and I'm really not in a position to answer for her.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman, if I can reflect a little legislative history, it took 15 years for this legislature to recognize the subject of felony DWI. And this year, not only in this bill, but in other bills that we've already voted on, we have dismantled felony DWI. And now we're recognizing a diversion program to allow people that are individually convicted of DWI to now be put back on the streets as they go through this diversion program run by a city, not necessarily by the courts and certainly not recognized by our Department of Corrections. This one element is a very serious broach to where we were going and how we treated felony DWI. I'm surprised that it's in this bill. It was one of the major reasons why a number of us voted against the public safety bill as it went out of here, because these type of programs continue to endanger our public, and it does nothing more than coddle the DWI offender.
Further discussion on Senate File Number 2.
Mr. President.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, and contrary to what Senator Limmer just said, that this program and programs like this do not coddle DWI offenders. Members, if there's someone that has broken the felony DWI statute, chances are they're going to sit in jail for a little bit. Okay, they're still going to take a little time out, Senator Limmer. The problem is that once people return to, you know, the public, they got to get back and forth to work. And, you know, not only in this bill is it in this bill, but it's in a couple other bills. And we're trying to expand that so that people who do lose their driver's license can get into a program, folks. And the DWI Interlock program is probably one of the best ones out there. Most states have some sort of DWI Interlock program. And basically what it is before you can start the car, you got to blow in the tube. And so it enhances public safety because, Senator Limmer, in the real world, most of these people that we take driver's license away from, they'll drive around out in the country until they'll find somebody that'll take cash for a vehicle. They'll buy it. They won't register it. They won't put insurance on it. They don't have a driver's license. But they figure, hey, I still got to get to work so I can make rent at the end of the month. They drive anyway. So let's at least put them in a program in a car that we're reasonably assured that they're not driving drunk in. That's kind of where we're going here. These people have to feed their families like everybody else. And if we set the bar too high, people aren't going to be able to get over it. So you get them in a program. You know, there's a lot of intense supervision. These programs work, Senator Limmer. Now, if you want to talk about the process of how this got in Senator Cohen's bill, that's one thing, which I might agree with you on, but this is a good provision. This is a good provision, members.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer, then Ingebrigtsen, and we're getting close to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, you and I both have had the unfortunate experience of knowing people that have been friends or relatives that have been hurt or killed in DWI accidents. You've mentioned that on the floor before, and I certainly have also. I believe that as someone who irresponsibly drinks and gets in a car and drives a 3,000-pound missile down a freeway, endangering the citizens, that this is a little soft on that type of person. And to tell you the truth, we always seem to have a discussion about the perpetrator, the poor DWI guy who needs to get back to his job, but we don't seem to have a discussion of the victims or the victims' families. And when a bill like this includes this type of provision in an accountability, government accountability bill, although it was already included in a public safety bill earlier this session, I begin to wonder why we have it in the bill in the first place. That's what was the cause or the reason why I stood up about this proposal. But we can talk all day about the DWI perpetrator and how the poor guy has to get back to his job, but we have to understand that, you know, thank heaven he didn't kill another family of four, and that we seem to continue to be eroding in one fell swoop this legislative session less and less penalty on the DWI offender, whereas it's taken many years for this state to be serious about taking care of the chronic offender. And that's why I'm raising this. This is a good public policy discussion. And that's why I brought it up. And I'm wondering, why is it a part of this bill? And then why are we going to these extremes?
Okay, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senator Limmer, I can't answer question number one. But question number two, I feel the same way you do about felony DWI. Between you and I and several other members here, we've probably carried the majority of the legislation in that regard. And any time someone is under the influence and they're driving out on our roads and they kill somebody, they ought to sit in jail for a while. I firmly believe that. But Senator Limmer, we're talking about this program, and part of this program is that there's all kinds of stipulations put on people before they can get back in, before they can accelerate through the program. They have to sit down. A lot of times they have to go to treatment. They have to have alcohol assessments. And one key component is if any place in their court-ordered restitution that they're ordered to pay restitution, that's part of the program too. A lot of times what we found by using these programs is that people end up paying their restitution to the families that you talk about, the victims. They pay it. And a lot of times people feel terribly bad that they made a horrendous decision that impacted someone else's family. And a lot of times, in the majority of times, Senator Limmer, there's true and sincere regret on part of the perpetrator. When we as society have people that are in that position, I believe that we should nurture that. Make sure that they have the treatment that they need, make sure that they have the tools that they need so that they can continue to provide for their families. And if they're in the program and they have to pay restitution, that's part of it, paying that restitution. And Senator Limmer, I know on face value this looks like a retreat from the direction that our state has been going for quite a few years, but I really feel that it's an enhancement, and I would not have let this come through the Transportation Committee and even heard the bill if I thought that there was a hint that this could be used improperly. I believe that these programs are good, Senator Limmer, and I'd like to see them continue. But once again, I can't answer your first question. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would the author yield for question?
Senator Cohen will yield.
Thank you. Senator Cohen, on page 13, I guess we're talking about the pilot program here is what we're talking about. Would you explain to me, and I'll have a couple questions here, that we're going to be allowing a diversion for people who have not even entered a plea in the proceeding? That I have a question with, as well as on the next page, I get into the eligible cities. Now, I understand that there are pilot projects that go forth in different parts of the state. And can you elaborate a little bit more as to why these cities were picked? And when you get to that question, answering that question, would you tell me how much this is going to cost approximately? Maybe I'm missing that someplace in here too.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I was not going to answer that. Senator Pretner Solon had come to the floor. I thought she was going to be able to answer your questions. Oh, there she is. She's going to answer your question.
Senator Solon, Pretner Solon.
I'm sorry, Mr. President, or
Water.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. I'm not sure what your question was.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, on page 13, bottom of page 13, it refers to people who have not even entered a plea in the proceeding is going to be in a diversion program. I don't quite understand that, as well as I see the cities in subdivision 2 on page 14. Why those particular cities were
are going to be involved in this pilot project? I guess, you know, there's probably a good reason why. And just what is the cost of the program?
Senator Pretner Solon, you know.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the part that I can talk about is the diversion program, which allows those who have had traffic violations, who have paid their fines, who have gone to their treatment if it's required, or their drug alcohol program or whatever, but are left, let's just assume they're two men. They have their driver's license taken away for the same act. Both men have the same consequences. Both men have paid their debt to society and are legally allowed to receive their license back. The fine to be collected is somewhere in the neighborhood of $600 to $800. One man pulls out a checkbook and he writes a check getting his license back. The other man cannot afford the fine, so he does not get his license back. This man then chooses to drive to work so that he can earn money to pay his fine, support his family, etc. But he's caught driving without the license, and the cycle continues again. Well, there are about 230,000 of these that occur in the state of Minnesota every year where people lose their license, and many of them cannot afford to pay the fine to get their license back. So what this does is allow them to work in the diversion program, to report they've already paid their debt to society, to work with a counselor that they have to be accountable to on a continuing basis. It allows them to get their license back and to pay for it as they go back to work. And they have to stay in good standing with the court and not have any further fines.
Okay. Further discussion. Seeing none, Senator Cohen renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File Number 2 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Are you ready for Mr. President, a brief recess for purposes of appointing conference committees.
Do you have to do something? We should get these conference committee excused read into the record before we recess. Okay, pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Higgins moves that the following members be excused for conference committee on Senate File 802. At 2 o'clock, Senator Higgins, Foley, Moi, Latz, and M. Olson. And pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Berglund moves that the following members be excused for conference committee in House File 1362 at 2 o'clock, Senator Berglund, Laurie, Sharon, Rosen, and Pretner Solon. And finally, and pursuant to Rule 12, Senator Langseth moves that the following members be excused for conference committee on House File 855 at 3 o'clock. Senator Langseth, Day, Lynch, Tomasoni, and Sieben. On those motions, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. And we've got on the motion to recess. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands at recess.
And are there privileged reports at the desk?
There are privileged reports at the desk.
Senator Pogemiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 708, Senators Phoebe, Ingebrigtsen, and Scheid. On Senate File 550, Senators Pretner Solon, John Dahl, Dibble, Senjum, and Sparks. Senator Pogemiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller. Without objection, fifth order business reports of committees.
Senator Cohen from the Committee on Finance, to which was referred Senate File Number 2078, a bill for an act relating to economic development, providing for stimulation of the construction industry, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Motion to adopt Senator Betzel, or Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee read by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion aye. Prevails. I think that completes the work at the desk, Senator.
Mr. President, Oldham. Members, tomorrow the ones I know of right now are the Sharon Communities Conference Committee Report, Sarah Moaz Public Safety Policy Conference Committee Report. Pardon me. I think Senator Latz may have a Ticket Sales Conference Committee Report that's coming back or is back. And there may be other items, but we'll come back at noon tomorrow, try to be done by 3 again. And we may go on some general orders. I'll take a look, see how the conference committees are doing. I think mostly we want to focus on conference committees tomorrow, though. So, Mr. President, if there's...
Before that, Senator Senjum, do you have a...
Mr. President and Mr. Majority Leader, as we come back at noon... are you planning on recessing at all for some discussion on those bills at this point? Why don't then the Senate Republicans, we'll call it bill review, but why don't we meet in room 107 for bill review if that works? Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know what the availability of that. Maybe a half hour before session so we can go through those.
Sergeant nodded his head that the room is...
Okay. Room 107 at 11:30 then.
Senator
go
Betzel,
through these.
Betzel, did you have an announcement?
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Conference Committee, Senate File 2082, will meet in 1/2 hour. And if I could meet with the Senate conferees briefly in the retiring room, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator Stump for an announcement.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Education Conference Committee will meet shortly after we're adjourned here, so that's over in the State Office Building.
Senator Bach for an announcement.
Mr. President, the Conference Committee on Taxes will meet in about 20 minutes, room 15.
Okay, any further announcements with Senator Senjum? Did you have a...
Mr. President, would the majority leader yield just for a question?
Senator Pogemiller will yield.
Senator Pogemiller, we all know it's May 5th. Looking towards a May 18th adjournment date, I think things are ratcheting up a little bit in terms of interest. Are we going to get done? What's the path? How do we get there? We've got House and Senate positions, which many of which don't even agree to today. Certainly conference committees are working. We recognize that, but I do think there is a little bit of feeling about what's going on here right now in terms of getting out on time. And I would like to hear, and I think this body would like to hear, and probably the state of Minnesota would like to hear, what your thoughts are in terms of moving forward over the next 13 days to move us towards getting home.
Mr. President,
Senator Porkemiller,
Senator Senjum, the time schedule is set up for a easy adjournment before the deadline. As you know, the budget conference committee deadline, budget bill conference committee deadline, is this Thursday at midnight. We're certainly hoping to attain that. The intent would be to pass the major budget bills and have them all on the governor's desk by next Tuesday at midnight. That would give the governor Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to make his choices with regards to those bills. We hope he will sign them all. And so we could, theoretically, we could be out of here before Monday, theoretically.
Mr. President, the theoretical is possible, and I hope that we can make that goal, Senator Polgar-Miller.
Okay, without objection, Senator Bach will be excused from today's session, 12 to 150. Senator Anderson from 12 to 145. Gimsey from 145 to 2. Senator Vickerman from 135 to 2. Senator Rose all day. Senator Johnson all day. Senator Stumpf, 130 to 2. Senator Pappas from 2 to 225, and Senator Murphy from 130 to 150. Senator, any further announcements? Senator Porkemiller, Senator Moi before Senator
Porkemiller. Mr. President, I believe that the members of the Public Safety Conference Committee need to be excused from until the end, but I can't recall the exact time when we need to be excused. So Senators Higgins, Moore, Latz. Already?
I don't think that microphone, I can't pick it up. Okay. Oh, Senator Higgins? Okay, everybody all right? Okay, now Senator Porkemiller.
Mr. President, I would move the Senate adjourn until May 6, 12 noon.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.